Hello and welcome to the live book business webinar, Facts, Fantasy, and Realities of Automating EPUB 3 Production at HarperCollins Publishers, sponsored by R-Suite. I'm Ellen Harvey, Associate Digital Editor at Book Business and the host of today's event. I'd like to thank everyone who's joined us today, especially our panelists. They've put together some great content for us, and I think we're going to learn a lot. I also want to thank R-Suite for making today's event possible. Today, we're going to be discussing EPUB 3 production, and in particular, automating the production of EPUB 3 files using DITA for publishers. DITA is an architecture publishers can use to organize their content and automate how it will be assembled and pushed to different platforms. HarperCollins recently adapted DITA to its own production workflow in order to optimize EPUB production. Today, our panelists will explain what DITA is, how it can help publishers automate their production workflows, and how HarperCollins implemented the changes necessary to implement DITA and streamline its own EPUB production. Before we get started, I'd like to take a second to point out the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with the wrench on it. If you missed the Tech Tips video that we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click on this widget for more information. I also want to point out the Q&A widget at the bottom of your screen. If you have any questions for the panelists during our webinar, please submit them here, and we'll address them during the Q&A portion at the end of the presentations. I'm joined today by two panelists, Elliot Kimber, Senior Solutions Architect at RSI Content Solutions, and Leslie Padgett, Senior Director of Global Digital Operations at HarperCollins. Elliot is going to be kicking off our conversation on DITA today. He has been doing generalized markup going on 30 years. He is a founding and current member of the DITA Technical Committee. He's the founder and principal developer of the DITA for Publishers open source project and a recognized expert on DITA specialization. Elliot was a co-editor of the ISO IEC High Time Standard, a founding member of the W3C XML Working Group, and a contributor to the XML Formatting Object Standard. Elliot writes and talks frequently on DITA, and he's the author of DITA for Practitioners, Volume 1, Architecture and Technology. And now, Elliot, I'll pass it on to you. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so I'm going to talk about DITA and DITA for Publishers and hopefully help you understand what that is. So the first thing we have to talk about is why are we here, right? So we're here to talk about EPUB publication automation, and ultimately that gets back to the use of XML, right? So as publishers, you're either already using XML in some way, or you've come to realize that XML is going to be essential to your business going forward in order to do the sort of automation and information and content management that you need to do. So I just want to make sure that you know, we all have the same understanding of why XML is essential. But you know, XML is a non-proprietary standard. It protects your most valuable assets by being the standard, by being non-proprietary. It enables process automation, reuse and interchange, search and retrieval. So for all of those reasons, XML is essential. But just saying XML is not enough, right? So there's a cost to using XML. I mean, no technology is free. So if you're going to use XML, you have to design the markup you're going to use. What are the actual tags that you're going to put in your XML for your publications? You've got to implement the tools that are going to do that processing, right? Somebody's got to write software that does what needs doing. You've got to have some kind of system that manages all that stuff for you, right? You're taking your content, you're putting it into a much more managed form, a form that you can do a lot of stuff with, but you've got to have systems that actually do that management. Historically, and by historically, I mean, you know, 3 or 4 years ago and before, this was a prohibitive cost. It cost a lot because of the nature of technologies and the standards and the tools that were available. So the question becomes, how do we lower that cost, right? How do we make it possible for publishers to take advantage of this technology, gain the business benefit without having to spend an unreasonable amount to get there? And that's really been my focus professionally for about the last 10 years is how do we lower the cost of using XML? And the answer that I arrived at was the DITA standard. And the reason is that Ditta, and I'll explain this in hopefully not painful detail coming up, but Ditta by its nature, by the nature of its architecture, has the effect of making the cost of using XML about as low as it's possible for it to be. And my assertion, and hopefully I will prove this to you, or at least demonstrate it conclusively, is that Ditta makes XML practical and affordable for all. Right? That's my assertion. Now, the question that you're immediately going to ask is, well, you know, how is that true? What actually makes that claim be true? So before I can answer that question, I've got to provide a little background. So what is Ditta? Ditta stands for Darwin Information Typing Architecture. And it's a standard that came originally from IBM back around the turn of the last century. It's an open standard managed by OASIS Open. It's intended for any kind of document that's primarily intended for consumption by humans, right, which is sort of a long-worded way of saying, you know, anything that we publish, right, anything that's going to go into paper or on a website or into an EPUB, as our focus is here, is a candidate for use for Ditta. It also has an essential feature, which is an extensible architecture that depends on controlled extension, and the focus there is really control. And the key drivers that drove the development of the Ditta standard were a single source, so being able to take a single source and produce multiple outputs, modularity and reuse of content. Certainly at IBM, who originally developed it, you know, being able to reuse content across product lines, across different kinds of publications, between suppliers and IBM itself, was very important, and that's a lot of what underlies Ditta. And then interchange and interoperation of content among different publishing groups. And that's part of Ditta that I think is really of interest to publishers. If you think of the job of a publisher is more about creating information that can be sold and disseminated in many ways, including in its source format, that interoperation aspect becomes very important. So not just about how do I get a final deliverable into a reader's hand, but how do I take my very valuable information content and make it available to other people who might want to buy that content and reuse it? How do I make that work as smoothly as possible? And that's very interesting as well. And, of course, Ditta as a standard for documents has all the sort of markup stuff that you'd expect to have in anything that's going to do documents. So it's got all that stuff. We've got MathML and SVG in there. We've got some stuff for learning stuff. So lots of stuff that you need. All right, so Ditta XML, what does it enable? So it's enabling reuse and repurposing of content, right? I can take the same content. I can use it in multiple publications. I can take the single source publication source. I can produce it in different formats. So I can generate, you know, EPUB, HTML, or whatever it is that I need. And it's changing interoperation. So the basic promise of Ditta as a standard is that your Ditta content can be used by any other Ditta user with minimal effort. Essentially, if you've got your content in Ditta, you can give it to any other Ditta user. They'll be able to immediately integrate it into their system, publish it, add it to their content, extend it, and whatever. And that's a unique feature of Ditta relative to any other standard for documentation. Certainly any other standard at all, but certainly any XML standard. The other thing that Ditta enables is you can have your own tagging, your own markup specific to your business needs, without impeding interchange. And that's another bit of Ditta's secret sauce. And finally, Ditta enables modular reuse pretty much any level of granularity. So if you're reusing at the chapter level, that works fine. If you need to reuse at the individual element level, right down to, say, you know, a paragraph or even a phrase within a paragraph, Ditta can do that as well. So it has a very robust architecture for reuse. So given that Ditta has all of these features, what's our value proposition? So what Ditta brings is the lowest startup cost to use XML. And this is something that RSI in particular has taken great advantage of. By essentially, you can put a Ditta based system in place, you know, very, very quickly, you know, in a matter of weeks, and you're off and running. And the reason for that is that pretty much everything you need is there out of the box. You can get started, but because of Ditta's ability to do a controlled extension, you know that you can refine your use of it over time without incurring a whole lot of costs in reworking your systems, and that's very important. So DITA has, I contend, the lowest cost of ownership relative to any other way that you could do XML, and that over time, the cost of ownership should actually drop, or at the worst case, it doesn't rise. Historically, XML systems became more expensive over time because the technology essentially calcified. And when you wanted to migrate your system to do something more sophisticated or something new, you pretty much had to scrap it and start over. And DITA says, no, that's the wrong way to do it. Let's do things in a way that allows us our systems to become more flexible over time rather than less flexible. And so fundamentally, that maximizes the value of your XML content. Right. It minimizes the short-term and long-term costs of your output processing that you're generating from your XML, and it also has the lowest cost of interchange. And that low cost of interchange then maximizes the licensing value of your content. So if you can license your database content to other publishers in its DITA form, right, which DITA promises you can do because of the interchange features that DITA has, that makes your content much more valuable because it costs less for other people to use it. And I think that's very interesting. All right, so what's the secret sauce? What makes DITA different that it has these features? It's DITA's markup architecture that allows any DITA processor to handle any DITA conforming document. And I'm not going to go into the details of how that works, but you can just take my word that it does in fact work. But what that allows you to do is add new markup without breaking your existing tool. So that means the current tools are inherently future-proof, right? So you build tools today that can operate on your DITA content. Those tools will continue to work on any DITA content into the future. And then any new tools you bring in that are DITA-aware will immediately be able to handle your new DITA content. And that's very different from the tools environment that you have in any other XML environment, certainly what people were used to even 3, 4, 5 years ago, where if you wanted to change your markup, you pretty much had to re-implement or at least touch all of your tools, and it was very painful. And it says, no, don't do that. So the point here is no other standard XML application has this feature of DITA. No other XML application has the characteristic that it is inherently flexible and that the tools are inherently insensitive to changes in the markup. And that's all about how that all goes back to DITA's features for interchange and interoperation. All right, so there's more. So the core DITA tools that are available for doing processing as your DITA content are free. So there's the DITA Open Toolkit, there's DITA for Publishers, which we'll talk about here at the end of my talk. These are free open source tools. One thing that means is that anyone can play, right? Individuals, small publishers, big publishers. You don't have to make this huge investment in software just to be able to use the content, right? In the past, and the not too distant past, XML required investments of millions. And now a relatively small upfront investment in tools and data knowledge can produce quite a large return, right? And that's of value to everybody, whether it's a large publisher, a small publisher, or even an individual. What it means is everybody can take advantage of this XML technology with a small investment. So that's DITA itself as a standard. So DITA exists as the standard. It's an architecture. It's intended to be extended and built upon. The DITA for Publishers project takes the DITA standard as a base and adds to it those things that publishers need specifically to meet their business goals. So DITA for Publishers, it's an open source project. It's DITAforPublishers.org is the main website. All the source code is on GitHub. And the goal of DITA for Publishers from the beginning was to lower the cost of use of XML by publishers. Right? Let's lower the bar as far as we can for publishers to use XML. Let's focus on meeting their specific business requirements, making it possible for them to publish the content they need, and not have to spend huge amounts of money on stuff that should just be there. So let's just make it be there, and that's what we did. So DITA for Publishers builds on the DITA standard. It adds markup that's specific to publishing documents. It adds output types that publishers require, so that's the EPUB, and Kindle transforms, and of course we're focusing on EPUB today. There's code for generating InDesign, HTML5. It also provides tools for using Word manuscripts, Microsoft Word for the manuscripts for documents, because of course, you know, with few exceptions, publishers, all your editorial work is done in Word. We have to support that in order for publishing to be practical. This is an open source project. It's a mostly volunteer effort. You know, we get some support from different users, but for the most part, it's, you know, just us doing the work. So who uses Dita for Publishers? Most RSI clients now use Dita for Publishers for their content, and that's partly because that's the, you know, the easiest thing to do, right? If you come to RSI and you say, we need an XML solution, RSI says, fine, here you go, it's based on Dita, and everybody's like, all right, fine, whatever. There are companies that are using the EPUB and HTML5 transforms that are not necessarily publishers. Those things can be used in isolation. They're not dependent on the Dita for Publishers markup that has been optimized for publishers. One of the challenges, of course, is because it's an open source project, it's hard to know who's using it because I don't have to, you know, nobody has to pay me to get it. All right, so to sum up, really, why would you do anything else, right? I mean, that's fundamentally where I've come to in this question of publishers' use of XML. If you need XML, and, you know, we assume that you do because you're a publisher, then a database solution is the fastest and least expensive route to a solution just because of the nature of the technology and the standard itself, right? And then Dita for Publishers extends that base standard to meet publishing specific needs. So that gives you a lot of stuff that you would have otherwise had to have built anyway. It's just there. And I contend that the database ecosystem increases the value of your database source because of those potentials for interoperation and licensing. And really, when you do the analysis, any other choice that you could make in terms of, you know, what's the basis for my XML solution, anything else you choose is going to do less and cost more. That's the message. All right, so over to you, Ellen.
Thank you so much, Elliot. Next, we're going to hear Harper Collins' perspective on implementing Dita for Publishers and their adapting that to their workflow. I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Leslie Padgett. Leslie began her career in publishing 15 years ago and has worked in print, digital, consumer, professional, and higher education markets. She's currently the Senior Director of Global Digital Operations for HarperCollins, where she oversees print and digital composition, ebook distribution, and HarperCollins Publishing Workflow System R Suite. And I want to include this fun fact. She once edited a fashion magazine for dogs, which led to an accidental role on the reality series Growing Up Gotti. Needless to say, she prefers ebooks. Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks a lot. And thanks a lot to Book Business for having us here today. So I'll get started. So you guys have heard enough about me, so I won't say any more, but I will walk you through our road to EPUB automation through XML adoption, specifically Dita. So when we started this project, you know, we were at a place where I think most publishers are today and will sound familiar to most of you, where our EPUB creation was dependent on our final print files. Every EPUB was unique, and we're outsourcing a large percentage, I'd say 90%, of our EPUB creation. We were also in EPUB 2 format and kind of waiting for the market to transition to EPUB 3, and we really had no efficiencies in place for any sort of automation or reuse of content. And we had to ask ourselves, you know, what are our goals for the project? And we had many goals around the project, and one being was to make our digital product, to automate our digital production. And so from there, we decided to do the automation. The goal of the automation was to reduce costs, to reduce time, and to really get our digital product to market much faster and to have less of a dependency on the print product and really do a simultaneous creation of print and of digital. So how did we get there? Or how are we getting there, I should say? So the first thing we did was made a decision to get up to date with EPUB 3. And that was not a decision that was taken lightly. You know, it's a very, very complex standard. There's many formats and requirements. You know, a nonfiction book is different than a fiction book, and a fiction book is different than a textbook. And EPUB 3 really can encompass all of those different formats. So where should we focus? That was a big topic. You know, what should we do and how should we focus? So internally, HarperCollins worked with the AAP to publish the AAP published with some folks from HarperCollins were on that board, published an EPUB 3 best practices document. And that really gave us a really great guideline to say, hey, what's important to the AAP and what do they think is important for consumers and what do they think is important for readers? And we could look at that list and say, okay, here's our first place where we narrow this down. Now let's look at HarperCollins and let's look at our content and determine which features support our content and our strategic goals. For example, MathML is included in the AAP best practices, but we don't use MathML that much in that much of our content. So we weren't focusing on things that didn't fit our content structure. And then we had other strategic goals around accessibility and just being up to date with the most current standards. So that was definitely a driver to adopt EPUB 3. So we looked at those goals and we really put them out on a piece of paper and we said, okay, what can we do short term, medium term, and long term? And we just steadily adopted all of those key features, and we'll continue to improve as we go. But we have now transitioned to converting our content, our ebooks to EPUB 3. And we just worked through, adopted the features, and then began to bring more and more of a percentage of our catalog into the EPUB 3 format. This also required working with retailers to make sure that they could actually accept the format, very much a chicken and egg type situation. So that was definitely a very thorough process here at HarperCollins, and the AAP document really helped us push us along and give us some guidance. So the next step is, okay, we're making EPUB 3, but we want to make it better. We want to make it faster. And we want to make sure that we have our content stored in a format that would allow us to get to print and digital, as well as allow us to store our content for reuse. And that's when we started looking at Ditta for Publishers, or Ditta, the extension of Ditta, which is Ditta for Publishers. So the first question we asked is Ditta right for us? There are a lot of different standards that are out there. There's some that, you know, DocBook, there's things that we used, you know, people used five years ago. There's some that we used, you know, just 2 years ago. But why is Ditta the right one for us? And we really did a lot of work there. And then we also thought, hey, why don't we create our own? You know, we could create a HarperCollins schema or a HarperCollins standard. Why should we adopt Ditta for Publishers? And most importantly, let's just double check, do we really need an XML workflow? And I will echo Elliot's mention, which is, I think, because we're publishers, we definitely need a way to store our content in a way that allows it to be flexible and the output can be for print or for digital. So I think XML does achieve that. So we knew that, but implementing XML historically has been, for publishers, difficult. We have a lot of things. We make good books, and that's the number one most important thing, and we can't let the technology get in the way of that. So that's what we had to think about. You know, HarperCollins has a very big focus on author care, so we had to make sure that our authors were still getting the quality that they need and were able to work in a format that would allow them to do their good work and write their good books. And our editorial quality could not be compromised, obviously. And we also had to make sure that we didn't put ourselves in such a box that it didn't allow us for us to be creative and allow our designers to really work and be flexible with their designs. We couldn't get into this kind of very technical XML-based workflow that didn't allow us to do our work or make our books. And we couldn't, once we accommodated all of those things, it couldn't take us longer to make our books. As we all know, our publishing timelines are getting shorter and shorter by the minute. So we want things done fast. We don't want to add more time to our production schedules. So those were all things that we really had to sit down and consider and decide if Ditto was right for us. And one thing I note here is that it was very, very important for us to use tools we were familiar with, like Microsoft Word and InDesign. There were no XML editors. You know, I couldn't imagine, you know, asking one of our editors to pull up an XML document and make some changes there. I would be laughed off the stage in that scenario. So we really had to sit down. We had to think about it. We had to ask all of these questions. And we did decide that Ditto was right for us, number one, because it is a standard. It already exists. It's an open source. We get it right out of the box. We can hit the ground running. You know, you don't have to sit for, you know, it could take years to sit down and comb through content and decide what the right structure is for you. And going with a standard, someone has already done that for you. And there's a community out there that's consistently doing that and consistently updating. And it's a community that we could get involved with as well. So we can give our input and we can add in anything that we need from as well, because it is that open source community. And one of the biggest things, one of the shiniest coins in the box was that if you adopt Ditto for Publishers, you also get the Ditto Toolkit. And with that, you get output for print and digital. So you get your EPUB, you get your InDesign, you get your PDF, you get your Mobi. So again, all in one package, hit the ground running, we can get our content in XML, and we can, you know, press a button and get our output for InDesign. So it was very, very attractive to us because we could get started quickly. Again, low cost, not a lot of work, not a lot of time. We can go in and we can just say, hey, let's put our books in there and see what happens. So that was very, very appealing for us. So the biggest step of this project was managing change, because we do have to think about our content differently. We have to separate our content from our design. We also in-house had a proprietary system that where we were using coding to map from Word to InDesign. And this was, we had to switch to a Microsoft Word styles-based approach to content authoring, which was actually very user-friendly. People understand how to apply Word styles. So it was really just being able to switch from a coding to a styles-based approach. And we also had to think about the way we use InDesign, because we needed to use InDesign as the powerful composition tool and design tool that it is. And, you know, that was definitely a different approach, and we worked with our design team, and we went through and we determined, you know, can we work this way? Can we work with this automated input into InDesign that then would allow us to pick up the design and the creativity that the designer gives to the document? So we had to rethink the way we use InDesign. You know, no more could we go in and necessarily make every single little change by hand. We needed to really use the style sheets and the document configurations, and what could we do to make that layout and that flow of that document happen even faster. So that was one of the big steps to go through. And then we had to think about text corrections and composition, because, again, we're not going to make the changes in XML. We need to make the text corrections efficiently, and we need to make them quickly, but also by preserving that source content, which is the XML. So, you know, where do we make the corrections? Do we make them in InDesign? Do we make them in Microsoft Word? Do we make them in both? How do we go through, and how do we do that differently now that we're working with this single source of content for print and digital? So we went through and we did a lot of talking and a lot of training. I will say that I think that's one of the most important parts of the project was the training. Well, Definitely the talking. We did a lot of talking with a very core group of some very, very smart people who had been at HarperCollins a long time, been in trade publishing a long time, and seen this process change over the course of many years. So we walked through and we really did a lot of talking. And it was across two divisions, actually, our HarperCollins publishers here in New York and also with our HarperCollins Christian publishers. So we worked as a lot as a team really well. There were a lot of hours put in. And then we took that, you know, to the mat, and we did a lot of training. And in our New York office, we had a two-month training program where folks could come in for 3 hours at a time and get formalized training. And that was very, very key to managing the change. It made folks trust the system. It made folks see the system. You know, no webinars, it was people in a room with a computer walking through the system. So that was, that's how we worked. And we still, even though we're using the system now, more talking and more training. It's just going to be consistent as we move through the process. So the technical implementation for this is, first we worked with RSI because the initial Ditto for Publishers toolkit, it was EPUB 2 output. And that was out of the box, and that's what we got, and that was very appealing. But while we were adopting this, we also decided on a parallel track to go to EPUB 3. So we worked with RSI, the folks who make RSuite, and we worked with them to add to the Ditto for Publishers toolkit a EPUB 3 output per the AAP recommendations, you know, included those recommendations. And so we worked with them on a project to say, okay, let's just get EPUB 3. Let's just, you know, get that format and let's get it out. And once that was achieved, we were able to take that output and then customize it or tweak it, I should say, to make it specific per our requirements and our structure and the way that we map our content and our books into Ditto. And that, again, we're working through now. We're revising it as we go. It'll definitely be a work in progress and can be a work in progress as we continue to move forward with the EPUB format. And then we implemented workflows around that new process for approval and distribution of those eBooks. So now we have it there. It's technical. We have the technical implementation. We can make an ebook, but how do we actually do it? You know, how do the people do it? So we are working to create, and I say we're working because it's a constant evolution, to create the standards for the EPUB output. And what we had to think about now was not that each EPUB was going to be unique, but what do we need to see in every EPUB, and how do we get that output? We're going to have this single source of content. We can't have two sources of content, you know, one for print and one for digital. We need to have the same content for both outputs. We still need to achieve the efficiencies that come with XML. So, you know, if we were creating a unique ebook or a unique output for every single ebook, we wouldn't be getting that efficiency that says, hey, your content is stored in XML, now output to this to X format. And that's a very quick transformation, and you can get your ebooks very quickly. But if we were to create, you know, 16 different outputs for 16 different minor differences for the different types of books, that wouldn't give us the efficiencies that we needed. So we needed to really get down to brass tacks and say, how do we get our content from point A to point B? And we really, again, we had to separate content from design. We author in Microsoft Word, and when we author in Microsoft Word, we're not necessarily thinking about what we're getting in the EPUB or in the InDesign output. That's really for our designers to work with. The designers will get the content. They then apply their creativity in the design to the output. So it's really separating those two, which some may think that would be very difficult, but actually that's how editors and authors think. They just think about their content, and designers think about how to make it look great. So we had to make sure that we supported that. I mean, that is definitely was a very key point of every bit of this, is that we can't jeopardize that. And, you know, print is still the queen, so designers must have the flexibility to make the print product. We can't jeopardize that just because we want to get digital faster and better. We have to make sure that print is still getting the fine touch that it needs, and that designers are able to really apply their expertise there. And, you know, we can make the ebooks pretty too. It's not like we're pumping out a bunch of ugly ebooks. We can create CSS, so that's a style sheet that's applied to the ebook. So if we wanted to, we could create a CSS for every single title that we create. Again, not much efficiency there, so we don't want to do that. That's not a goal of ours, but it's possible. So, you know, what we can do is we can say, okay, we're going to have a CSS template library where we can choose from these six different styles or these six different designs. And then if we have a really high, if we have a, you know, high priority book or a big author or something that needs a lot of design, then hey, yeah, we can create a CSS for that title, no problem. But we wanted to get away from having to recreate the wheel every single time we created an ebook. Okay, so this is where we are today. We're crossing the finish line where we are achieving our EPUB automation, finalizing that. And with the EPUB automation, you know, what we get from that is that we can create EPUBs quickly at any stage of manuscript authoring. So even if we don't have a print component or a parallel print product, if the manuscript has been marked up correctly and then converted to XML, we can get an ebook out at any time. So if we need to get an e-galley out early, if we need to create some samples for a special program, we can absolutely do that. If our author wants to see their ebook first before we get it into digital, no problem. We can do that as well. As long as the content is marked up in the manuscript, it doesn't even have to be final from an editorial standpoint. It doesn't have to be copy edited. We can do a conversion and get an ebook at any point in the workflow. We create our final EPUB from a single source of content, not the print output. So that was key for us. Because I think, as most of you probably know, you create the print output, then you send it to somebody, and then they create the ebook, and then you send it back, and then you got to check and make sure, do all the words match, and, you know, what about this drop cap, and does it, you know, it's just a lot of comparison and a lot of reliance on the print product. But now we can create them simultaneously. So when we're going into final passes and when content is complete for print, we can make sure that we can say, hey, let's make the ebook because it's the same source of content. It's coming from the same place, which is the DITA XML. And one great thing is that we can revise and update ebooks at any time. And I think we all know that revising and updating an ebook is much less onerous than updating and reprinting an entire book. But this makes it even easier. And then when that change is made for digital, it's still there for print for our reprints or our later editions because, again, we have that single source of content. And now print and digital are also less separate. You know, we're bringing those two together. So the folks who are doing the composition for print are also managing the output for digital. So, you know, we're converting the XML, we're outputting for InDesign, and we're also then converting the XML and then outputting for digital as well. So that team is getting up to speed on both sides, on both pieces. So So that's definitely a goal of where we're going. And our expected efficiencies, you know, we're early in this process, but what we hope is to significantly reduce the time to create an EPUB from a week to a day, is what we're hoping. A reduction of dependency on external vendors, so we expect a cost savings there. We'll be able to be more responsive for high priority changes like legal or marketing that comes through. And we have better reprint and edition management with that single source of content for both print and digital. So this is, you know, where we're going. This has been the goals of the project, and this is how we did it. And so far, so good, knock on wood. And I think with that, I can give it back to Ellen.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Leslie. So we've covered quite a bit of ground on Adida and EPUB automation today. Before I open it up to questions, I just wanted to let our viewers know that our suite will be hosting its user conference on May 5th and 6th in Philadelphia, home of Book Business. So I'm sure they will dig into many more questions of workflow and their solutions around EPUB production. So feel free to check that out if you guys are in the area. But I'd like to move on to questions now. We've got a number from our viewers. And the first one I'd like to direct towards Leslie. There are some questions about the staffing impact that was required to institute the changes in your workflow and production. You know, what type of training was required for your authors, editors, designers, and compositors, if you could touch on that.
Sure, no problem. So really, I think that it's kind of, it's two questions. So number one, what was our staffing impact? Our plan was and still is to really keep, it's the same staff that we had before. We have editors, we have authors, we have designers, and we have a composition team. So the thing that XML allowed us to do is to really redefine what those roles were, which we actually realized really took us back to a more traditional publishing workflow. So, you know, editors edit, they edit in Microsoft Word. Designers design, they create their designs in design. And then we have our composition team doing the composition and actually, you know, doing the pagination and doing the paging. Whereas with our previous workflow, you know, designer, once we went into InDesign, we were forced to stay in InDesign. So all corrections had to be made in InDesign. And authors can't get into InDesign. Editors can't get into InDesign. That is something that a designer or a compositor has to do. And while designers and compositors can be very good at doing that work, they should be designing and they should be composing books, you know, not necessarily entering corrections because they're not classically trained to do that. Introducing an XML workflow allowed us to get back to those classically trained buckets, editors edit. Designers design and compositors compose. So it was really interesting because the way things have evolved just over time and through technology and with the dependency on InDesign, we kind of pushed everything into the designer's bucket. We said, hey, now that we're in InDesign, you have to do it all. You have to page the book, you have to design the book, and you have to edit the book because we're in InDesign and we're stuck in InDesign. So it was about kind of going through that and separating what those responsibilities were because now we're free to do that because we don't have that dependency on that final print output. So it was really kind of getting back to the original. Again, one of the biggest things that we needed to do was to look at how we were used InDesign and to just use InDesign more thoroughly. So better use of style sheets, better use of greps, for those of you who are InDesign folks, better use of document setup and properties. So when content came in, when the content's transformed and it comes into InDesign, it picks up all of those designs that the designer does well. But the designers had to, you know, apply their designs via style sheets, via master pages. And we had to really think differently about that. And it was a switch. So, but they get it. You know, they completely get it. So that was definitely a hump that we needed to get through. And also just understanding for our composition team, understanding XML and transformations and getting the output for digital. In terms of staffing, you know, our staffing really hasn't changed. We did bring on a content architect, so someone like Elliot, but not necessarily with the pedigree of Elliot, not 30 years of Ditta. But, you know, we brought someone on who was very familiar, particularly around production editorial and copy editing and the Microsoft Word side of, you know, the content authoring. What do authors and editors need to do to make our books? And we brought him on. His name's John Atkins. we brought him on, and he really understands how to create and make a book. He's worked in publishing for years, but he also has a technical side. So he is mapping that content from Microsoft Word through to Ditta and out to our print and digital output. So he definitely is, you know, learning and us bringing on XML is a learning curve for everyone, but we brought someone in who would own that process, so who would own the Word to XML to InDesign to EPUB. And that person, you know, he's not going to review every book, but he can help out. He sets up that process, he sets up that workflow, and he becomes the person that really understands how our content works through the composition style. The composition process. So that's been our main impact across the board. Oh, and I will say we needed to make some changes within our editorial teams to move from a codes-based style, from coding manuscripts to styling manuscripts. And this was true really just for our New York team. Our Upper Christian team, they did a combination of styling already and codes depending on which division. So they were, you know, the folks who were doing styling, it was really not a big difference for them. It was just a change in the styles. And the concept of structuring content was the same. It's just the way that we applied that structure was different, codes versus styling. So we did need to do some training around that.
Great. Thank you, Leslie. And Elliot, a question for you. You mentioned in your presentation that the cost to implement Ditta standards is very low for publishers, and that small publishers as well as large can implement these standards. And I was just wondering, what might be the difference in process for a small publishing house, say a publishing house that publishes 20 to 50 titles a year? How might the process of implementing Ditta be different from a house like as large as HarperCollins?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think the main difference is you have to spend less time deciding what it is you're going to do. I mean, the technology is the same. I mean, the actual tools you're going to bring down are the same. If you're a small publisher, you might not have the budget to support, you know, a full content management system. And, you know, these tools can be used, you know, on their own. Of course, it's, you know, it takes a little more effort to get everything hooked up if you don't have a tool like our suite to, you know, to manage the details for you on the back end. But fundamentally, it's about understanding your process and going through the process that Leslie described of, right, you know, our manuscripts are in Word. How do we go from those Word manuscripts into the XML we need? The steps you do there are the same regardless of your size. And likewise, once you've got the XML, generating the outputs, fundamentally, you're just pushing the button. If you don't do any customization, you're going to get, you know, generic EPUBs. You know, you're going to get some generic InDesign. Then you start working through, all right, what do we need to do to customize the output in order to meet our specific publishing requirements, you know, from a branding and layout standpoint. Again, those activities are pretty much the same. Regardless of your size, it's really more a question of, you know, how many players do you have to satisfy in the process of doing it.
Gotcha, thank you. And another question for Elliot. We have a couple of questions coming in asking about the current state of the Ditta toolkit. Are there any sort of changes on the horizon for Ditta, or any updates that publishers might expect with the standard?
Yeah, so the Ditta standard itself, we're currently in the process of finalizing version 1.3. The current version of the Ditta standard is 1.2. That adds some important new features, most of which are probably not that interesting to publishers for the most part. They have to do with some really supporting some pretty complex use cases that mostly occur in technical documentation. But some interesting things, including the ability to more formally represent links between different publications. But that DITA 1.3 will not really change, won't change anything. One of the things I should mention about the DITA standard itself is the DITA standard, the commitment that the DITA standards organization have is that every new version of DITA is backwards compatible with the old one. So the introduction of 1.3 will not require any reaction on anybody's part. All your existing DITA documents continue to be perfectly valid DITA 1.3 documents. In terms of the tools, the DITA Open Toolkit, the latest version is version 2. The DITA for Publishers code is currently only certified to work with the latest 1.x version of the Open Toolkit, which is 1.5. And we're actively making some enhancements to the EPUB transform right now. One of our publishing users, Stephen Calderwood, has been doing a lot of work to make sure that every small detail of EPUB check is being satisfied by the EPUBs that we're generating. So those are the big things. Otherwise, the standard is pretty stable, and the DITA Open Toolkit is pretty stable, and the DITA for Publishers standard is pretty stable at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Elliot. Leslie, we have a question about proof corrections. One of our viewers was wondering how HarperCollins handles proof corrections in your current workflow.
Sure. So we still create proofs. We create proofs like we would with any process where we flow into InDesign and then create an output for authors and editors to review. The difference is that we're not making those corrections in InDesign. We're making those corrections in Microsoft Word and then reprocessing the XML and the output to InDesign to create any subsequent proofs. So we go back to the source content to make our corrections.
Okay, great. And you had mentioned, Leslie, in your presentation that there were other standards that HarperCollins had looked at when it was first thinking about reworking its EPUB production. Could you mention what some of those standards are?
Sure. So we were looking at DITA, of course, and we looked at DocBook, which is something that I think that a lot of publishers adopted back when, but a lot of people converted it and really made a lot of changes, and we realized that it doesn't really support, it could support us kind of basically, but it wouldn't really give us the output and the click button publishing, you know, that Elliot was talking about, where you can press a button and you get an InDesign output that you can then design, you press a button and you get the EPUB. We also really considered going with our own schema, and we do have a structure in a way that we marked up our content prior to adopting DITA, using our own code. So the structure was there, and the schema was there, and we also had input again from Harper Christian Publishing, who also has a schema around our Bible content. So we did have kind of the starts of it, you know, within HarperCollins, but we just decided it wasn't worth it to put in the extra effort to get to extra effort and cost that we could get from just using DITA.
Okay, great, thanks. And Elliot, we've been talking a lot about kind of how HarperCollins has been using DITA for trade publications, but we do have some questions about features that would be more common in education or textbooks. So the question is, does the DITA standard support glossaries and more complicated indexes that might be associated with an academic text? And can it display technical data like mathematical formulas?
So the short answer is yes. DITA has built-in markup for glossaries and various ways that, you know, the glossary references to glossary entries can be a bit more dynamic. There's some facilities for automatically generating glossaries based on words that are used. Although, you know, you'd have to do a little custom work to make that do exactly what you want for your publication. DITA has a general facility for doing index markup, so you can have inline index entries and then generate back of the book indexes. There's no I mean, there's no inherent limitation in the nature of the indexes you generate, but your, you know, the out-of-the-box formatting is really only going to do your basic three-level back-of-the-book index. If you wanted something more sophisticated, could be implemented without too much difficulty, but, you know, it would require a little effort. Then for things like for MathML, so one of the big things that's in Ditto 1.3 is standardizing the integration of Ditto with the MathML markup and providing some markup specific for representing equations. The Ditto for Publishers project has had an integration with MathML for some time, and now that's you know, essentially been made obsolete by a standard version of that in Ditto 1.3. And that's something you can actually use it today. RSI has some customers using that, the Ditto 1.3 MathML stuff now, because it just, you know, you can just plug it into your existing system and it'll work. Ditto has a more general way of integrating any what it calls foreign markup. So if you had some structured markup like a chemical markup or something like that, Ditto provides a general way to integrate that in. And have it, you know, play nicely with the standard. Again, you'd have to do some work to implement the output processing for that. But if that was, you know, if that was important, the technology framework is there to make that all work.
Great.
Does that answer the question?
Yes. Thank you. I think we may only have time for one more question, and I'll open this up to either you, Leslie, or Elliot, whoever feels that they're most qualified to answer it. But the question is, you both had mentioned that Ditto is a low cost standard. It's open source. But the question is, where does the cost come in if the tools and the standards are free?
Well, Elliot, you can tag on to me and correct me if I'm wrong. But Ditto for Publishers and Ditto Toolkit is something that you can go out, you can go adopt the standard now, you can bring it in-house, you can work, and you can apply those processes to your content. So that piece of creating a standard and getting the output, you know, InDesign, EPUB, Mobi, PDF, that is done, that's complete, it's done for you, it's out there, it's in the community. So that piece, which I think anyone who's doing any sort of content analysis knows that would be a significant amount of effort, months if not years of effort, to do that analysis and get your content in and get your content out in a format that you can publish. So that is the piece that's free. The piece that you need, if you don't have it in-house already, is an XML processing tool. And, you know, you can get low-end tools, you can build tools internally, or you can get a more robust tool. For us, it was our suite, and there is cost associated with buying and adopting a new system, but that core piece of getting our content into Ditto and getting the output there was no additional cost for that. It just worked. We adopted our suite. Ditto works with our suite. So if once our content is in, like I said, we can click a button and a transform happens, and then we get our output that will then be fed into InDesign or our output that will be fed into EPUB. So the cost is around the system that processes the XML, but the standardization and the structuring of your content and then creating those output transforms with XML, that work is done for you, and that could be a significant cost to any publishing house.
Thank you, Leslie. Elliot, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to understand that, you know, when we say it's low cost, we mean relative to the general cost of implementing an XML solution. So we've eliminated a lot of the startup cost by providing the markup design and the tools, you know, or at least the starting point of the tools for free. But there's still a lot of work to do in terms of understanding your process, in terms of applying the technology to your stuff, into building, you know, custom processing or custom configuration that meets your specific business needs. The difference is that your focus can be specifically on those things that are actually unique to you without having to also eat the cost of just getting to the point where you're able to start focusing on your stuff, right? So instead of saying, well, in order to start meeting our business needs, we have to do all this stuff that should already exist, we just made it be the case that that stuff just already exists. So the cost is in meeting your specific business needs on top of this existing, you know, free or low-cost technology.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Elliot. Unfortunately, we've run out of time for today. I just want to let everyone know who's watching that if we didn't get to your questions, RSI, our suite, who's hosting this, sponsoring this webinar for us, will follow up with you directly on your questions. And if you weren't able to catch the entire webinar, this will be archived on our website for 90 days, so you can catch the webinar in full, and we'll let you know when that is live on our site. On behalf of Book Business and our suite, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out, again, our webinar page to get information on our archived content and upcoming webinars. If you would take just a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, we'd be grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. And thank you again, Leslie. Thank you, Elliot. And thank you all for joining us.